Welcome to Midday on this snowy, rainy Mardi Gras. I'm Sheila Cast. I hope you're having a good day. I'm glad you're spending part of it with us. You know, it's hard to remember when big, fluffy snowflakes are piling up, but April is approaching, and with it, the primary election. If you live in Baltimore, the race for mayor likely is on your radar screen, but big changes are coming to another city institution this election season, the Baltimore City Council. This year, 6 of the 15 sitting members of the council are not seeking re-election. Those departing include some of the longest-serving council members, among them more than 100 years on the council. The April 26 primary falls a year almost to the day after the riot and unrest that followed the death of Freddie Gray. What will the renewed sense of activism in the city mean for the elections? Does the city council need new blood, or is the loss of more than a century of experience a bad thing? Later in the hour, we'll hear from some of the members themselves. Brandon Scott, Bill Henry, and Robert Curran share their thoughts on the changes ahead. We're going to get started, though, with Luke Broadwater, who covers City Hall for the Baltimore Sun, and WIPR senior news analyst Fraser Smith. Both are here with me in the studio to discuss the implications of the city council turnover. Luke and Fraser, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Happy to have stormed in here, Sheila.
To have stormed in here.
Yes, we did.
Well, I'm happy that you did also. Luke, what do you make of this turnover? What do you think the real reason is for it?
Well, I think you rightly point out to start the show that we have 6 retiring or resigning council people. 3 are retiring: Robert Curran, who you'll have on later, Ricky Spector, and Helen Holton. Together, they have just decades of experience. Both Curran and Holton were on the council for 20 years each, and Ricky Spector has, I think, more than 30 years of experience on the council. She is the longest-serving local official in the state of Maryland. And then in addition, you have 3 people running for other office: Jim Kraft running for judge, and both Councilman Mosby and Councilman Stokes seeking the mayor's seat. So right there, you're going to have turnover. Then I think in addition to that, we have 4 very competitive city council races. I see the 4th district, which Councilman Bill Henry is going to be on in a little bit, as very competitive. He's already been outraised 5-1 by a challenger, Brian Hammack, who's running against him. I see the 11th district seat, where you have a new councilman, Eric Costello, facing 2 pretty tough challengers as a tough race. And I see District 13, where you have Shannon Snead challenging Warren Branch, who just barely lost him 4 years ago, as a very close race. So we see we're going to see perhaps 7, maybe 8 seats turnover, and that's really, it's a confluence of factors. It has to do with the age of some of the members. It has to do with the ambitions of others, and it has to do with the tough challenges that other candidates are facing.
And did you sort of see this coming, like last year, or have you been surprised by the number of...
Some of the retirements surprised me. You sort of can't picture a city council without a Spector or a Curran on it. I mean, between the various Spectors and Currans, I think those seats have been filled by one of those names for maybe 50 or 60 years. I mean, you're really talking about long-standing Baltimore political families there. So that's a very interesting dynamic. I did see some challengers coming. I mean, you couldn't necessarily watch that East Baltimore race in 2011 and see Shannon Snead lose to Warren Branch by 30 votes and realize that she wasn't going to come back. So you kind of knew that was maybe coming, but others were quite surprising. Jim Kraft seeking a judgeship, I didn't see that one coming. I thought he would probably stay on the council too, but it's going to be a lot of turnover and a lot of uncertainty about what that means.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some of that. Fraser Smith, I mean, some of the city council members who are leaving are the ones who have been there the longest. Is the council in danger of losing its institutional memory?
I don't think so. I don't think its memory has done much for it or for the city, frankly. And I think Luke has really summed up the circumstance here, but the other really big factor here is Freddie Gray and what has happened to the city and what people see is happening to the city in ways that they may not have focused on as clearly as they are now. And of course, we have a mayoral race here, as well as all this turnover on the council.
For sure.
And so if you have leadership straining to express itself in races for the council, and you also have a newcomer in the mayor's office, it seems to me there's all kinds of opportunity there for the kind of positive synergy that we haven't seen in a long time. And we're really overdue for it. We need it very much.
Luke Breadwater, do you see any incipient alliances with, I mean, are these two races, are these two sets of races, the mayor's, the race for mayor and the race for all these different city council seats, sort of proceeding on separate tracks? Are people cross-endorsing? I mean, do you see how some of the alliances that Fraser's alluding to might be shaping up, or is it too early for that?
We are seeing some endorsements, but not necessarily from the mayoral candidates yet. And we do know of some alliances. So, for instance, several of the challengers on the city council share the same fundraiser as Nick Mosby, who's running for mayor, Colleen Martin Lauer, who's the very well-known fundraiser out of Locust Point. She's backing Brian Hammack, who's running against Bill Henry, and she's backing Jermaine Jones in the 3rd District, who is running for Curran's seat.
The seat that Robert Curran is vacating. Yeah.
Correct, and that's a very competitive race, too. In fact, each of the races that there's someone retiring are shaping up to be quite competitive. You look at Jim Kraft leaving in the 1st District. That 1st District's probably going to be the most fascinating of all the races. You have 3 Democrats already who have raised more than $100,000. I mean, that's more than many of the people running for mayor. They have enough to run citywide campaigns. They're in a very crowded field. Then on the Republican side, you have a contested, politically relevant primary for the first time in decades. Larry Hogan won the 1st District 2 years ago, 53% to 47%. So that's going to be a race everyone will be watching after April, because it might be the only competitive race for the general election. And I expect to see some state money and maybe even national money going into whoever wins that Republican primary there, because it would be the Republicans' rare, rare chance to win a seat in Baltimore.
Yeah, Fraser, I think I read the last Republican was elected, the last time a Republican was elected to the city council was in the 30s?
I think that's right. I haven't double-checked it recently, but I think I've seen it recently, too. I think that might be right.
So, I mean, that's, we're all trying to wrap our brains around that. I can see looking around the table, we're all going, what, I mean, what, how would that change things to have a different party represented? Are the national party labels not that informative about dynamics on the city council?
Well, in terms of Baltimore, if you get people who are willing to stand up and speak and say things that make the Democrats uncomfortable, I think that there's potential for positive synergy there. And if you get a Republican in the council, it's probably somebody that doesn't have a lot to lose, unless they immediately fear being primaried like what happens nationally, which I think probably would not happen. So I think it would be a good thing. Any kind of change here is good.
That's WIPR senior news analyst Fraser Smith here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here in the studio with me is Luke Broadwater, who covers city government for the Baltimore Sun. We're talking about the turnover that's already in the cards for the Baltimore City Council. And I'm curious about what you, listeners, what you think about it. What do you think of the voluntary exit of 6 sitting council members? What do you think it will mean for the future of the city? Does it make you hopeful or worried? You can join the conversation. Our local number is 410-662-8780. Or you can send us an email to midday@wypr.org. Some people might say, okay, this is interesting to talk about, but I mean, really, the city council has so little power, they really don't have much control over the budget.
Sure, that is a very popular and accurate position that many people have. Obviously, it's a strong mayor system. The mayor is really the powerful position, and that's why you see, I think, 29 people running for mayor. I wouldn't undersell the city council totally. The city council in recent years has passed some quite important legislation, many times has set has been more progressive than the rest of the state. When Bobby Kern comes in, I'm sure he'll might mention his smoking ban, which preceded the state of Maryland and sort of inspired and gave the political will for the state of Maryland to go ahead and do that indoor smoking ban. That was passed by the city council first. The city council passed the ban the box legislation about not being able to check off a criminal record on job applications. That is now being held up in some ways nationally as a model for other states and jurisdictions to emulate. So even though they lack significant power in comparison to the mayor, and that's just true. I mean, that's the way the government is. That's not to say that stuff can't get done on the city council and that they don't matter, because I do think that they matter.
Frazier, you want to jump in on that?
Well, I'm sure this is an oversimplification, but since I've been here in the late 1970s, he said...
We bring you here from a historical
yeah, thank
perspective.
You. Thank you very much. There have been sort of two ways of seeing it, because there are, it turns out that you either have a big fight between the mayor and the council president, as we had when Wally Erlinski was president of the council, and he was constantly fighting with William Donald Schaefer, and that sort of gave you the only sense that there was anything at stake, and there really was nothing, because in those days people said it's all about 10 votes. I don't remember what the numbers are today, but if the mayor had 10 votes and it was easy for him to get 10 votes, then whatever he wanted to do happened. It just happened, and Wally could scream and yell, and it happened anyway. And so and now it seems to me that there's almost a somnolence about it, because once those two figures were gone, people kind of reverted to what Luke just said. They don't expect much, and they probably don't see much happening, in part because there are so many old people, old folks, old time servers. I don't mean to denigrate them at all, because I mean I want to applaud everybody that wants to serve, because that's what they should do, and if they have the skill and the endurance and the patience, and you need all of those things to sit in a body like that that doesn't have a lot of power, and still do your best. So if that's where we are, and we do have the kind of situation that we've been describing here, it's a big time for the city. It's a big moment for Baltimore.
Luke.
Yes. And one thing I think we're starting to see change is a somewhat equaling of the powers between the city council president and the mayor. Not totally equal, obviously, but what we're seeing is, unlike for many years, Martin O'Malley and Sheila Dixon were running mates, right? So the city council president and the mayor were aligned. Then Sheila Dixon and Stephanie Rawlings Blake were running mates, so they were aligned. Now we have Jack Young as the city council president, and he and the mayor fight bitterly all the time. I mean, right now we're talking about the city council possibly overriding the first mayoral veto since 1982. So if the city council has this person who at its head who is unaligned from the mayor, which likely will be the case, and he is able to command the city council votes the way he has been, and in enough power to override mayoral vetoes, now we really have the council asserting itself and possibly passing legislation the mayor doesn't want, overriding it, taking it to the voters, and it's much more of a balance with the council now asserting its own power, which it hasn't for decades.
On that note, we have to take a quick break, and when we come back, for the first time in six decades, as Luke mentioned a few minutes ago, the name Curran won't be on the ballot for city council. Councilman Robert Curran will be here to give us his perspective on the council. Plus, we'll talk to Councilman Bill Henry of the 4th District to get his thoughts about the upcoming election. And you can join the conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780. That's our local number, 410-662-8780. Or you can send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the upheaval coming in the Baltimore City Council elections. Six of the 15 current members are not seeking re-election. I'm still here in the studio with Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun and WIPR's Fraser Smith. Councilman Bill Henry, who represents the 4th District, is on the phone to talk with us. Welcome.
Hi, Sheila. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I guess, hey, Luke, Fraser, how are you?
Good afternoon.
So, Councilman Henry, let me ask you, how do you feel about the fact that such a big portion of what could be called the old guard on the council is leaving?
Well, I have to tell you, as someone who has been watching the council for a long time, even before being on it, these are certainly going to be some interesting times. I don't know how much of this you guys have already covered, but I can't recall, even back when the council was larger and had multi-member districts, I can't remember six council people turning over at one time. So this is going to be a very new experience for all of us.
Right, but how? Be more specific about.
Well,
Think it's going to mean in terms of the dynamics of how the council works together and how it works with the mayor?
Well, okay, let's start with the organizational structure. We have 12 committees right now in the current setup of the council. Six of those committees are losing their chair, and six committees are losing their vice chair, and if my count is correct, Three committees are losing their chair and their vice chair. So there will be, unless the committee structure is dramatically revamped, we're going to have something which we haven't had in a while, which is we're going to have freshmen in leadership positions, which I think will be very exciting. I think that the fact that there's going to be this much turnover at the same time that we're also going to be having some turnover in the mayor's office provides for the possibility of a very different working dynamic between the mayor and the council.
Luke Broadwater and Fraser Smith are listening to you very soberly, and I can't tell from their faces if they have a question for you. Do either of you want to have something you want to ask Councilman Henry?
Well, I mean, I think there's a possibility for some confusion and some slowing down while people get, you know, as they used to say, find out where the restrooms are.
And, learning curve.
Exactly, and that doesn't augur well for dynamism, but over time you may see it, and I think that's the hope that we're looking at here, and the same will be true, I would think. For whoever becomes the mayor, even if it's one of the candidates that has a lot of experience.
Well, I had a conversation, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure who I was speaking with, and this was a couple years ago now. It was shortly after the last election, where I looked at the current council, and said, it may not be obvious from the way that the votes are coming down, but we really have gotten away from the idea that the council is just a constant rubber stamp for whoever is mayor. Already by this term, we probably had fewer members of the council who were just by temperament inclined to support the mayor. We probably had fewer than we'd ever had in the past. The difference was that we had, between the people who were just generally inclined to support the executive and people who had a personal relationship with the current mayor, there was enough for the mayor to maintain a real advantage in terms of a legislative agenda. But I think what you're going to see coming in is a council with comparatively few people who are just, you know, by nature and history, inclined to vote for whatever the mayor wants, and a lot more potential independence.
Councilman Henry, this is Luke. One thing I've noticed just in my time observing the council is there's been, I would say, I don't know if uprising is the right word, but asserting of the council's power, certainly in the past couple of years. The last couple bills that I really remember the mayor fighting tooth and nail and winning on were her budget a few years back, which was like an 8-7 vote. The audit bill, which got watered down very closely. And then since then, almost any time the mayor or the city solicitor comes forward with, or the finance director with a letter objecting to legislation, the council almost uniformly rejects that and goes ahead and passes the bill, which is usually keeping with the wishes of the city council president. Have you noticed that shift as well?
Well, to some extent, there have been, there's always, I have to be careful when I make generalizations like that. But, you know, in the 25 years I've been in and out of City Hall, there's often a struggle between whoever is mayor and whoever is council president to push an agenda. And I have seen President Young has been very successful in the last couple of years of pushing through his agenda. But at the same time, some of the structural handicaps between the mayor and the council have continued to thwart him. I think just looking back to the end of 14, when the council passed two pieces of legislation that we passed a bill to ban plastic bags, and we passed a bill that would have required body cameras by a certain number of officers by a certain date. And even though the council passed both of those bills over the mayor's objection, the mayor was still able to veto them, and there was a sense that there was not going to be sufficient support on the council to override either of those vetoes, and so they stood. And that was, that was not last year. I mean, technically that was about 15 months ago. Mm-hmm. But, there is, I've said this many times, this is an incredibly strong mayor system of government that we have here in Baltimore City. To the point where it is, periodically people get interested in the idea of maybe we shouldn't have such a strong mayor system of government. Maybe we should do something radical to change that dynamic, where I've repeatedly said there's lots of little things you can do that would change the dynamic a little bit. If we had only needed 2/3 of the council to override the veto instead of 3/4, I'm fairly certain we could have overridden the veto on plastic bags, on the plastic bag ban, and maybe even the body cameras.
Councilman Henry, we're going to have to let you go. Just real quickly before we say goodbye, you're facing three challengers in the 4th District. I assume it's a pretty active race. How do you think the activism that's risen in the city since Freddie Gray is affecting voters and will affect turnout?
Well, it remains to see how it will affect voters. Just the fact that so many people are running for all of the districts, I find that very encouraging in terms of we've had a couple cycles in a row now where there's been a feeling of, I don't want to call it apathy as much as a lack of belief that what people might do would matter, that change matters. And I think that feeling has definitely subsided. And my hope is that it will result not only in a council that is motivated to be progressive and move forward and make the changes Baltimore needs to make, but that it will be a council that comes in with a substantially larger mandate because more of the electorate recognizes the fact that their vote is important.
Councilman Bill Henry of the 4th District, I appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks a lot. That was Councilman Bill Henry here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. With me in the studio is Luke Broadwater, who covers City Hall for the Baltimore Sun, and WIPR's senior news analyst, Fraser Smith, and also Councilman Robert Curran, who has announced he is not running for re-election. Councilman Curran, welcome back to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheila.
Let me ask you the same question about how you read the electorate. In the wake of the Freddie Gray situation.
Sheila, if I may take a 30 seconds, though, I want to thank YPR for over the years that I've been guest up here, and YPR being the conscience of talk radio in Baltimore. It's always been a pleasure to come here and what a service YPR does.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Yvonne Winger and Luke Broadwater and the other members of the Sun over the years that I've dealt with, John Fritzy, Doug Donovan, Jerry Seals, Robert Guy Matthews, Annie Linsky, editorial folks, Andy Green, Ann Adorno, and Fraser Smith. I don't want to leave you out, Fraser, because they've always been accurate and fair. And that's the most important thing. We are not friends, elected officials, with reporters, but we got to be friendly. So I just want to get that out. I'll never have an opportunity to say thank you guys for being accurate and fair over the years. Now your question, Sheila.
The question was, how do you read the electorate this year? Do you think it's a different ball game that those who are standing for re-election will face?
Well, obviously, the Freddie Gray situation back in April causes some discontent among voters, but that may have a reverse effect. People might say the H with all of you and just don't vote at all. I was hoping that this primary, even though I'm not a candidate, would have a bigger turnout because of a contested presidential primary. If the Maryland becomes a factor in the Democratic presidential election, whereas the delegates elected in Maryland, I think we'll have a tremendous primary turnout. We're always going to have a general election turnout in the presidential cycle, 60-70%. But the primaries usually of Maryland have always been tops 40, 30 in the city sometimes. Just a city election, maybe 30. So hopefully that there'll still be a race when Maryland voters vote for president for the first time in decades that we have a contested.
And of course, there's also a race for U.S. Senate.
Yes, that's going to bring out some voters. So I'm hoping that the turnout will be good. I don't know if the and I was disappointed. I was down the election boards the following deadline night, around 8 o'clock, and it's usually a hub of activity over the years.
I missed you by about a half an hour then.
It was only one person in there.
Yeah.
At around 8:15. And in the old days, we would go down there, the elected folks or those that are politicos of type would go down there the hour before deadline. It would be ticket formings and people dropping out, people getting in. And it's so sad to see that wasn't happening this year.
Bring back the machine.
Bring back the machine. Well, the machine folks have moved on to other precincts in the sky. Fraser, but
well, they did stimulate activity and interest and a stake in the outcome.
Well, hopefully the machine, and of course you would have you'll talk about turnover in the city council. I don't know how many numbers were turned over in 1959 when Mayor D'Alessandro Jr. lost. My dad also lost because of the coattail effects back in the 50s. There would be some maybe 15 to 20, 25 candidates running for city council per district. Mm-hmm. Not like we have when I ran 4 years ago, there was only three. If I had chosen to run this time in the 3rd district, there would have been maybe seven. And actually, the folks were saying, well, you know, you got several opposition, you got seven or eight. Well, if it was only me versus Sheila, I'd have a problem. But me versus Sheila, Luke, and Fraser, where you're dividing up the vote, I wouldn't have a problem as an incumbent. So
because your name ID presumably would be higher.
Right, and I take pride in over 20 years. I've helped a lot of folks one-on-one. It's not so much about the smoking ban that Luke mentioned or about the stuff I do for Barks. I want to talk about the mayor's budget, what I do for the animals. But it's when you affect as a council person one-on-one, you get raw sewage out of somebody calls and say, I got to back up my basement. You get that raw sewage out 4 hours versus 3 days. those type of things, or you get a help get a child transfer from a school where they were before bullying became a big issue. There was some folks say, "Hey, can I get my child transfer?" And you help get that. When you affect a person politically, one on one or their family, they remember that. And in regardless if you vote for taxes or you vote for whatever, they remember that you helped Uncle Bill, you helped my sister-in-law, you helped my father, you helped me. When you do things one-on-one for folks politically, that's what people remember. That's what gets you elected as incumbent.
I want to remind listeners that you can be part of this conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. This is Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm here with Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun and Fraser Smith, WYPR senior news analyst. And Jan has called us from Baltimore. Jan, welcome to Midday.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're all well.
Thank you, and you too.
I have a quick couple of questions, and then I'll take my answer off the phone. If these tectonic plates shift, what will happen with the City Board of Estimates and the City Planning Commission?
The Board of Estimates and the Planning Commission. Who wants to take that on?
I thought the earthquake of the new regime's coming in. The Board of Estimates has got to stay the same, where you have the mayor, city solicitor, director of public works, council president, and the controller. There is a charter amendment to alter that, but I don't think that's gotten any traction in the city council at this time.
It hasn't thus far, although Councilman Bill Henry, who was just on, submitted that charter amendment. It's lain dormant for now 2 years, maybe three years. But yesterday, after he found out the mayor had vetoed his youth fund, Jack Young pledged he would revive some of these bills to weaken the mayor's power. Now that he believes he has enough votes to override. So we may see that one come back in a couple of weeks.
The Planning Commission obviously will have new representatives of the mayor, new council representative. Ricky Spector's been on there for many years. Bill Henry was for a while, and Ricky Spector's on that. But the real power with the show, and Luke and Fraser might know this, is with the budget with the mayor. That's where, obviously, the bottom line in any private industry or public entity as the city of Baltimore is the budget. And if you're with the mayor on her budget, whether it's because you're with her on a container tax, which I was years ago, or you're with her on the budget so you don't sustain cuts to the programs that she wants, what happens, the mayor comes back to the council members that are with them. What do you want to see restored? Your priorities for the budget. Over the last 7-8 years, I've done my friends on Stockholm Street, the Baltimore Animal Rescue Care Shelter, Barks. I've taken up I like to consider myself the leading animal welfare advocate on the city council, and I helped restore cuts to them in the tune of maybe $600,000 and helped to get some additional animal enforcement officers. So the council members coming in, the new ones, maybe not know how to work with the mayor with the budget, but they need to know what their priorities are. Were they at the school programs? Were they at the rec center in their district? Were they keeping a fire station open in their district? They need to have to formulate what their priorities are budget-wise. And are you going to work with the mayor on her budget? And then you're going to see that your priorities are taken care of.
I appreciate the call, Jan. We've got to take another short break here. We're going to be here with Councilman Bobby Curran and with Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun and Fraser Smith of WYPR. And with you, if you'd like to call, what's your reaction to the exodus of some of Baltimore City's most established politicians? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm here in the studio with Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun and WIPR's Fraser Smith. We're talking about big changes coming to the Baltimore City Council. Councilman Bobby Curran, who is retiring, is also here with me in the studio. And we have a call on the line from Claire in Hamilton. Claire, welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much. I just want to say I'm excited about the changes.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
You're excited about the changes because?
Because I have been
I've lived in Hamilton now for 25 years, my five-year home. And I have to say that, Mr. Curran, I'm excited to see new things. I feel like you have not delivered on this part of your people, Northeast, Lauraville, Hamilton.
What in particular are you disappointed about, Claire?
Well, particularly among many things, particularly about the Royal Farms issue that has gone down in this neighborhood, and the amount of people and community that have put in so much time and effort only to be, I don't like to use the word lied to, but I think that's an appropriate word to use.
Claire, I appreciate the call, and I certainly want Councilman Curran to react to it, but I also want Marcy's comment to be on the table, too. Marcy is calling us from Hydes. Marcy, welcome to Midday.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I enjoy all of your programs. I wanted to say that I'm an old neighborhood, an old Lauravillian, and Bob Curran has done great work for the city. And I think he's a bit of an icon, and I always look forward to hearing what he has to say. And I disagree. Hamilton and Lauraville, over the years, have improved 100%. I mean, it's not, you don't see bars on the windows. You don't, you know, you have a thriving, those two neighborhoods are thriving. And also, I wanted to say I love what he's done with the Barks program and the animals and helping the shelter, and it saddens me. I mean, you know, what Claire has to say. I don't know if Mr. Curran remembers me from the, used to work at the neighborhood Christie's bartender, and I think he's done a wonderful job, and I'm sad that he's retiring.
Thank you for the call, Marcy. Claire has left us, but what would you like to say to either of these callers?
Well, Sheila, as you know, and I've learned this from Duke Burns, the former mayor and councilman and council president, the day you're sworn in, you make enemies. And Duke Burns used to tell me, is that you got to get three new friends every day because you're going to lose two. And that's just the nature of politics. If I could please everyone every day, I'd be up for the Nobel Prize. But issue in the I thank the second caller concerning my issues with the animal shelter and what I feel I've done positively on Hartford Road. The unfortunate thing with the Royal Farm is misinformation is out there. Maybe one of the problems I've had over the years was not being so self-promoting with Twitter or Facebook or hash browns, hashtags and all that. That's one of the reasons I don't get around it. You're not going to continue. But the Royal Farm issue, folks got to understand, it wasn't about the Royal Farms. It was about the gas pumps. Royal Farms could have gone there by right and do what they wanted to do with the convenience store. It was the issue with the gas pumps. They wanted 14 gas pumps. I got them to cut down more, but the Board of Municipal Zoning Appeals is the one that made a final decision. I didn't have that decision. What I did do was support the Glenham Belher Community Association in the original vote, which thumbs up the Royal Farms. I believe there was competitive-driven opposition. I mean, competitive-driven because I was approached by some gas station owners in the area saying, look, you're going to go to the Royal Farm, that's going to cause a problem with us. So I believe the opposition was competitive-driven.
Okay. I appreciate your responding. And Claire, I appreciate your calling. And Marcy, also your call. Yesterday, I spoke with Councilman Brandon Scott, who represents the 2nd District in Northeast Baltimore, one of the youngest council members, about the changes ahead. So Councilman Brandon Scott, you're one of the newest members of the city council. You were elected in 2011. How do you feel about the fact that some of those who have served the longest are leaving the council?
I mean, for me, I think it's a mixture. I'm excited that we're going to be passing the torch to newer and hopefully younger people in office to try to move the city forward in a different way. But also, I'm very grateful for many of my colleagues who have spent decades serving the city, you know, and who have helped me out so much growing into my role. So it's a mixed bag for me, but I am very excited about what this can mean for the change in our city, because I think it's time for my generation to take hold and for us to show that we have learned. We're going to stand on the shoulders of our predecessors and take the city to the highest heights that we ever saw.
Voter turnout is notoriously low. in Baltimore City. Do you think the Black Lives Matter movement and the activism following the death of Freddie Gray will change that?
I think that will be a part of it. I think that the fact that it's going to be doing a contested presidential election is going to bring out more people. I think that issues are going to bring out more people. I think that there's going to be a bunch of reasons, including down to people wanting change at the council level and having to see so many young people who have been out campaigning and banging on people's doors to get them to go out to vote will be there. And because people want change. So I think that from Black Lives Matter down to just in local neighborhood activists are all going to be a part of seeing more people come out to vote.
Well, let me pick up on that. This seems to be a year of political outsiders, both on the national and local level. What do you think that says about what people are looking for in an elected
official? It depends on the person. I think that it depends on the person. It depends on the neighborhood. It depends on the elected representative. I think that what people are saying is what myself, since I've been here and others have been saying, is that we need to change the way we think and change the way we operate. You know, for me, changing the way we operate city government and looking at things in a different way has been one of the top things that I want us to do. But unfortunately for too many, it took April to happen for them to realize that. But that's what folks are saying. They just wanted to see things done and looked at and worked on in a different way.
Put a little meat on those bones for me. When you say changing the way we do things, what in particular do you intend to
change? Change everything in city government, changing from the way that we police our communities, changing the way that we are open or not being open about how we're spending taxpayer dollars, changing the way that we fight for school funding, changing the way how we decide who gets funding for what as far as after-school programs. That's what people want. They want to see transparency. They want to see us not do the same thing and give taxpayer money to the same people consistently over and over again for results at a minimum. They want us to look at everything in its totality. And as I said, after April, in order for Baltimore to truly be more, we're all going to have to do more, but also everyone's going to have to be uncomfortable, and everyone's going to have to realize that we're going to have to change the way we operate from every aspect of the city, not just politics, not just government, from religious, business institutions, the average citizens on the street. We're all going to have to change.
Everyone's going to have to be uncomfortable. That's what Baltimore City Councilman Brandon Scott told me yesterday. He represents the 2nd District. What do you think this means for incumbents who are running? First of all, do you, Luke or Fraser, do you agree with his analysis that this election is all about change? And if so, we've been talking about the 6 councilmen, including Councilman Curran, who is here with us, who have decided to leave. But do you think others are at risk?
Others, absolutely. Others should be at risk in every election, and I think even more so in this one. And the worst possibility is that we'll see more of the same because people are even more discouraged than they were to begin with. I really don't think that'll happen because I think there's a lot of energy out there, and what we need is somebody that can capture it. And that'll happen mostly in the mayor's office, but it'll be important for the council to get into that ball game as well, just as Councilman Curran has been for these many years, and we should all congratulate him and thank him.
I do think there is a change vibe in the country, and that it will be harder for incumbents to win than in a normal election, but I don't think that it fundamentally changes the nature of how you win elections. I think that some of these people have simply signed up to run, they filed, and I don't see any great evidence that they are doing very much campaigning. And you're not going to win that way, no matter how many people are angry at the incumbents. So you've really got to look at the challengers that are raising money, doing a ton of door knocking, seeking endorsements, running good campaigns. Those are the people to watch. So I do not think all of these incumbents are in danger based on what I've seen so far from some of the challengers.
Sure, if I could just comment, and Luke is right. There are folks that run all the time, or a lot of the times, and don't put the energy and effort into it to get a campaign organization, fundraising. And unfortunately, fundraising is a big part of even a city council election. And I never look forward to fundraising. I only did it every 4 years. Some folks do it every year. But if you don't have the resources to run, you're not gonna be able to sustain a campaign. I believe that the issues, Sheila, for council people to need to address and at their level is same as I heard in San Francisco the other day for the Super Bowl. There was some outcry because people were concerned about the addiction rate, about the affordable housing, about the homeless issue. So there are going to be some major issues that a council person needs to have some sort of handle on. Obviously, the mayor's office is going to have a bigger handle on it, but they're going to have to worry about not just redevelopment in downtown, how many cranes we're going to have in the sky for new construction, new opportunities, but the issues of especially addiction. As chair of the health committee, we had a hearing on the heroin task force. If we get a handle on that in Baltimore, we'll get a great opportunity to move forward in the affordable housing issue and the homeless issue.
When Councilman Curran, when is the last time Luke asked you this question during the break? Mm-hmm. But let me see if we can get a quick answer because we just have a couple minutes left. Mm-hmm. When was the last time there was a city council election without a Curran or a Specter running?
Well, I believe that Ricky Specter has been there 39 years, and before that, her husband Alan Specter served on the council in the early 70s. My dad was from 53 appointed, 55 he won, 59 he lost when he threw out the Delos Andrew Jr. regime, came back in 63 through 77 when he was unfortunately one of the two council people murdered, and my brother Mike from 77 to 95, and myself from 95 there. So I would imagine 60 years to the 61
wow.
years.
Wow.
Now the Curran hasn't been on it. The Specter's maybe 39 and maybe 50 years.
And on that note of change, we have to wrap this up. I'm really grateful to you all for being part of this conversation. Councilman Robert Curran, Luke Broadwater, who covers city government for the Baltimore Sun, and WYPR senior news analyst Fraser Smith. Thanks, too, to council members Bill Henry and Brandon Scott. And thank you, our listeners. I'm glad you've been part of this hour. I also want to thank The Veranda for providing lunch for Midday's guests, serving farmers markets in and around Baltimore. The Veranda features homemade Indian street food with vegetarian and vegan options. The Veranda is located on the Avenue in Hamden. Menu and catering information available at theverandabaltimore.net. I'm Sheila Cass. Tomorrow on Midday, what would you do if you didn't have a bank account or a credit card? Millions of Americans rely instead on check cashing services, money orders, payday loans. We'll look at what it means to live in a banking desert. That's tomorrow. Today, stay tuned now for Here and Now. And happy Mardi Gras.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.